Welcome to the Logic Consortium.
So what should you do in that case? Well, like everything, it's your own choice. Do you want to live in a democratic society, or do you want to live in the society we have?
Today on the show, we have Professor Robert W. McChesney, the Gutskill Endowed Professor of Media Studies at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. Professor McChesney has authored and edited 17 books in the area of media studies. He's the host of a very popular radio show and podcast called Media Matters, which can be downloaded on iTunes. He also founded FreePress.net, a national organization for media reform. Today, we're going to be talking about his 2004 book, The Problem of the Media. Professor McChesney, thanks so much for this interview. And my goal is to talk about your 2004 book, The Problem of the Media, and some issues surrounding the book.
Sure, I'd be glad to.
Okay, and I wanted to start by putting everything in a little bit of a broader context. One of the themes in the book is how media and information that the public receives has really changed over time. Could you give us an idea of what media and journalism was like during the 1700s and 1800s?
Well, the content of journalism or news as we think of it today was quite different. I think for the most striking difference was that especially in the late 18th and 19th century, it was what we would call today stridently partisan, meaning that all the newspapers and periodicals of the time had explicit political opinions that drove their coverage. They made no effort to be neutral or nonpartisan or objective. No one. Everyone had a strong viewpoint. And this is quite jarring to many Americans who assume that the First Amendment and the founders, when they instituted freedom of the press, they had in mind the idea that you would have a neutral, objective press that would tell the truth and not bend the stick for one particular political viewpoint. But in fact, that is precisely the sort of journalism we had in that period. Now, it's worth noting that in American media history, traditionally, this period of American press history, the first few generations after the Revolution, has been regarded with great suspicion. And more than one textbook, it's called The Dark Ages of American Journalism because it is so stridently partisan. And I think this is really an unfair characterization of the period. Partisan journalism is indeed something to be highly concerned about if, in fact, you have a situation like in the Soviet Union or Nazi Germany where there's only one party that's allowed to have a newspaper, where there's only one viewpoint permitted. But our First Amendment, one of the purposes of it was to make sure that there would not be such a situation where only viewpoints that were supportive of the government and power were permitted. So when you had multiple parties and multiple viewpoints available and easily provided to the citizenry, a partisan system actually has certain advantages to it. Not that it's a perfect system, but it has the great advantage of drawing people into public life in a way that more recent versions of journalism do not have. They get people, they always try to link up stories in the news to a broader political philosophy and a broader view of the world, to make sense of the world rather than leave it as some confusing collection of unconnected facts.
You know, am I right to say that one of the biggest potential advantages was that the population really questioned what they heard and wanted to know who the owners were and what their motives? So really an active population.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily put it that way, although that's certainly an inference one could draw. I think that a more direct way to put what happened was that in an era of partisan journalism, every editor, every newspaper, whenever they covered a story, would be trying to put it in some sort of context. They'd be trying to make it fit into the worldview of the paper. So every paper would be striving to make sense of the world. And so that for a listener or a reader in those days, that meant when you read a story about a complex issue, there'd be incentive by the editor to make it clear to you what it meant for the values of that paper. And that was a very nice way to draw people into public life. And just compare that to how modern professional journalism tends to deal with complex issues, and oftentimes it's very confusing and off-putting because they're going to great lengths to avoid anything that could be seen as a qualitative assessment or putting in the context that might suggest a value judgment. And as a result, oftentimes people, when they consume contemporary news media, are more confused when they're done with it than they are before they started.
You know, talking about the contemporary news media a little bit, one of the things you talk about in the book is that in the early 20th century, there was really this sea change in the way that journalism operated, a switch to so-called professionalism in journalism. Could you expound on this a little bit, this switch that happened?
I'd be glad to. You're right. Many Americans think that the notion of professional journalism and what they call objectivity grows out of the First Amendment and the founders of the Republic, and nothing could be further from the truth. All our journalism is stridently partisan, and all newspapers were expected to have the viewpoint of the owner of the paper, and the owner was usually the editor throughout the 19th century, even as it was a highly commercial system. And in the early 20th century, this partisan journalism really began to be a problem for the newspaper publishers in the United States. And all total, when you put it together, in the first 15 or 20 years of the 20th century, journalism was in a major crisis. It was regarded as a very dubious undertaking, and it was probably more roundly criticized than at any other time in American history. The solution to this crisis for monopoly newspaper owners was to strongly support the development of professional journalism. The idea that you'd have the revolutionary split between the owners and the editors, and no longer the owners and the advertisers, in effect, dictate the editorial viewpoint of the paper or how it covered the news. Rather, you would have trained professional editors and journalists who would cover the news, and a reader in the community would no longer need to worry about whether it was a monopolistic newspaper in the town and who owned it, because that wouldn't affect the content. The content was controlled by trained professional journalists, and they were working by a professional code, and they did not reflect the values of the owners. And this is the era, therefore, the birth of professional journalism with this new idea of neutral, nonpartisan journalism was the era when all the journalism schools were founded, because these were the schools that would be training this new era of editors and reporters who would be controlling the news. And this is all roughly 100 years old that this took place, and it was a major revolution in journalism and put us in the situation we're in today.
Let me remind everybody that we're in an interview with Professor Robert W. McChesney about his 2004 book, The Problem of the Media. You talk about a few of the switches that or the changes that professionalism in journalism really brought, like official sources. There was never really a concept of a White House correspondent before.
Yeah, I think there are a number of crucial changes, but the most important thing that I think listeners to this program need to understand is that the notion of professional journalism is not a bad thing. And in fact, most Americans embrace the idea of professional journalism as it developed, because it certainly looked a lot better than what it replaced, which was stridently partisan and corrupt, and you couldn't trust it at all. Professional journalism did not have to be assume the form it would come to assume in the United States. In fact, there was a major fight over what professional journalism should look like in the United States during the 1930s, 20s and 30s, and into the 40s, until we finally settled on the sort of version we have today. And the version of professional journalism we have is one that is, you know, really comports well to the commercial needs and political needs of the newspaper owners. So it is not truly independent. And a notion of professional journalism in the first place is always a little bit fraudulent, in the sense that the working journalists and editors never really did control the newsroom. The owners hired and fired. They set the budget. And as all organizational sociology makes clear, when owners hire and fire and set the budgets and give raises and give promotions, their values quickly get internalized by those inside the organization who wish to rise to the top. And those who can't internalize the values don't rise to the top and usually end up outside the organization at some point. So the type of professional journalism we ended up with what it did, among other things, was it valorized or gave legitimacy to people who were official sources, or what are called credential facts, as the basis of news stories. And what that means is that, you know, if someone elected position or someone powerful said something, that in itself made it a legitimate news story. The journalists could cover it. And if they were challenged for why they covered the story, they'd say, well, don't blame us. We report. You decide. We just cover what people in power say. And this was a new development in American journalism. Prior to professionalism, an editor stood behind what they said. And if an editor of a paper thought that something the governor or the president said was stupid, even if it was considered very important by other newspapers and other newspapers covered it, they'd have no qualms about not covering it at all. I thought that was dumb. I'm not covering it, or I don't want to cover it. Under professional journalism, the range of sort of what political coverage is covered is determined by what people in power say and what they debate. And that's what journalists cover. And this removes all the controversy of partisan journalism, because editors and publishers can say, hey, don't blame us. We just report what people in power debate. The classic example of this came in the 1950s when Joseph McCarthy, the senator from Wisconsin, made his outrageous claims every now and then about hundreds of communists in the State Department or the Army or this or that government institution. And he never had any evidence for it, but he made these wild charges. Well, professional journalism simply report it. And, you know, then citizens said, why are you reporting this? There's no evidence for it. And they said, well, we aren't saying there's evidence for it. We're just reporting what he said. We report, you decide. So Joseph McCarthy was able to use this convention basically to have the news media be a megaphone for his smear campaign, and largely uncritical megaphone for his smear campaign for much of his career. And under pre-professional journalism, that would have been impossible. Editors would have not run that unless they were in agreement with what McCarthy said. They might have run it then, but otherwise they would have either not run it or they would have lambasted McCarthy for trying to trot out such an absurd thing without any evidence and gone after him hard. Unfortunately, under professional journalism, what tends to happen is the range of political debate is the range of what people in power are debating. So on issues where people in power have strong debates, and they're like maybe over the issue of abortion rights, for example, or there might be strong debates, then journalists have a lot of room to work because they can get quotes from both sides of the aisle. There's a lot of area for journalists to root around within the range of a legitimate debate by people in power. The problem for professional journalism, its great weakness, is that when people in power tend to be in agreement on an issue, it becomes virtually impossible for professional journalists to raise it as an issue, because if they do, they're accused of being ideological, unprofessional, having an axe to grind, wanting to talk about an issue that no one else is talking about, pushing their own agenda on the news. And this becomes a major problem in the United States over the course of the 20th century through to today, because that means our journalists pretty much are limited to the issues they can take up critically, to what people in power say this is an issue worth taking up critically. And that's a much narrower range than a free society should have. I'll give you one example. There are many, but I'll give you one. The decision, the right of the United States to invade any country it wishes at any time, regardless of international law. In American politics, all politicians at the top of Democratic and Republican Party hold that to be our right. I mean, rhetorically, they might say something different, but in reality, they all agree that the United States, and the United States alone, can invade any country it wants if it so determines it's in the U.S. interest to do that. No other country in the world is allowed to do that. France can't decide to invade Nigeria because of French interests. We would think that would be outrageous. And certainly not a country we don't get along with at all, like Venezuela, so we're going to invade a country. But they don't have that right. But we do have that right, and we expect everyone in the world to go along with it. Now, that is never raised as an issue by our news media. You know, you'll never see a journalist hector a candidate for president on that issue, or go after a U.S. Secretary of State on the right of the United States to invade any country it wants. They might question a specific invasion, but the fundamental right is off limits. So if a journalist were ever to raise this issue and say, why, do we even have a right to invade Iraq? they would get a blow-off answer. And if the journalist persisted, they'd be accused of having an axe to grind, of being ideological and being unprofessional. It would be a career killer in the professional context.
Very interesting. Really narrowing the range of debate in some of the issues that you're talking about where politicians agree. You talk about in professional journalism, the people play a more passive role as consumers of the news. Is that just professionalism in journalism in general, or the type that we have here?
Well, I think it's clearly the type of professional journalism we got here because it's so scared of context. It's so scared of antagonizing people in power, unless it's representing someone else in power, that it backs off and it makes politics much more confusing, and it makes politics much less interesting. And I think that it's not built into professionalism per se. The sort of professionalism that the journalists in the 1930s were striving for would not have been a partisan journalism. They weren't interested in having a journalism that worked for the Republicans or the Democrats or any other political party. They wanted a journalism that represented everyone outside of power in the United States versus everyone in power. They wanted to have a very difficult, hard yardstick held up against everyone who was in power or who wanted to be in power, and that included the private sector as well as the public sector, under the assumption that the people without power, without property, needed to know what was going on if this was going to be a legitimate and effective self-governing society. And that type of journalism can make journalism really exciting. We have it today. There are a handful of journalists who practice that sort of principled, tough-minded democratic journalism. The most famous are people like Bill Moyers would qualify, Amy Goodman would qualify, Chuck Lewis, I think Seymour Hersh, there are a handful of them. And these are journalists who, you know, don't pull punches on Democrats. I mean, Amy Goodman went after Bill Clinton and will go after Obama as he's elected every bit as much as he went after George W. Bush. She has the same yardstick for everyone. So does Bill Moyers. But that type of journalism is anathema to corporate media owners or to newspaper publishers in days gone by. That continually antagonizes powerful politicians and commercial interests. That's not sort of professional journalism they were interested in.
Talking about commercial interests, there's been a real rise in the commercialization of media and the media's dependence on advertisers. And how does this really affect the news that we see?
Well, it affects it in a lot of ways. I mean, one of the reasons we have professional journalism in the first place is because of advertising. When advertising became the primary source of revenues for newspapers around the turn of this last century, it was at that time that because of it, newspaper economics changed, and instead of having markets where you have 5 to 10 daily newspapers, the emergence of advertising as the dominant form of support created a situation where you're much more likely to only have one newspaper, and that was a lot of the pressure that really made publishers interested in producing professional journalism. And the theory of professional journalism, of course, was that advertisers were held at bay. They and the owners were on the other side of the Chinese wall. It separated them from editorial control, and advertisers really had no interest or say in what the editorial content was. That's never been true. I mean, basically, there is almost a Sicilian code in American journalism that, you know, major advertisers are not messed with in the editorial wing of a newspaper or a medium. You just don't do that. I recall... 14 years ago, I was in New York at an awards ceremony, and one of the awards that was given at this ceremony was for the best local television news in America. This is at Fordham University. And the station that won it was, an NBC affiliate in Boston, or some network affiliate, and apparently it had just the best local news in the country. Everybody was raving about it at this awards dinner who was familiar with it. And the woman who was the general manager or the news manager for the station who stood up to accept the award said something I thought that was very brave and very striking. She said, you know, I'm really honored at this award. We worked very hard to do a great job. But I think the words of praise that we're getting here are really not entirely accurate. You have to know there are a handful of stories that our station will never touch, nor will any other commercial medium in the country. We will never do a story on any major advertiser that advertises on our station. We just know to stay away from those if we want to keep our jobs, we want to keep our owners happy. And most of us just internalize it, don't even think about it. Most reporters do. That's simply the way it is. And I think it's, in fairness and accuracy, I have to let you all know that. We do a great job of once you understand that there's some things that are just off limits to us, but we have to be honest about the fact there are some things off limits to us. I thought that was an amazing speech she gave, because it's very, most journalists, as she said, usually internalize these values. They just understand there's some things you don't cover, and those that rise to the top are the ones that you internalize it the easiest, so it never presents any great ethical dilemma for them. And that's really quite true. I mean, major advertisers get a free pass. The most striking example of this in American history, the most impressive probably as well, comes with the cigarette industry. It has now been shown, documented, that cigarette advertisers, which played a huge part, and have played a huge part in news media for generations, during the 1950s and 60s in particular, into the 1970s, when news magazines would cover stories, those news magazines that received a great deal of cigarette advertising, and that includes most of them, did almost no critical work on the effects of cigarette smoking on public health, on an individual's health. And those media that did not get cigarette advertising actually did good work on it. It was that blatant. And regrettably, since there's so much cigarette advertising, that means that a huge number of Americans never really had much access to the information about what a deadly and destructive drug nicotine is, and how deadly destructive cigarette smoking is. And I think it saves like countless hundreds of thousands of Americans died an early death as a result of that.
Let me remind everybody that we're listening to the Logic Consortium and our interview with Professor Robert W. McChesney, the Gutzkill Endowed Professor of Media Studies at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, about his 2004 book, The Problem of the Media. Professor McChesney,
one of the most common critiques that you hear today, especially recently, is that there's a liberal bias in the media.
Can you tell us what you think of this critique?
Sure. I mean, this whole liberal bias argument really emerges after the Second World War, and it emerges sort of during the high watermark of professional journalism. And to the extent professional journalism was effective, and it probably was at its best in the 1960s, to the extent it was at its best, that meant basically it had autonomy from the political pressure of owners, and it could cover the stories it thought should be covered, and it had the resources to do that. And to the extent it had autonomy from the politics of the owners and advertisers, this pissed off political conservatives. They liked the good old days when owners ran the newsroom and dictated the political viewpoint of the newspaper, the magazine, or the radio and TV news department. That was their dream scenario. And so more or less this whole liberal critique argument was an argument on sort of forcing professional journalists to go back and represent the political viewpoints of their owners and not have any independence. Are they liberals or left-wing? I think you research, the real scholarship in this shows that they tend to be quite centrist. And to the extent that argument had held water, it was during the 60s and 70s, which was the high watermark of journalistic autonomy. Since the 70s, professional journalism has been under sustained assault by commercial pressures. The autonomy has shrunk, and the evidence of a liberal bias has, I think, all but disappeared. In fact, I think the best way to understand the campaign about a liberal bias is to understand it as a crucial part of the right-wing campaign to basically make the news media work to advance its cause. And as the Republican Party has even admitted, their chair once said, the whole liberal bias thing's a lot of baloney. It's basically working the refs to get better coverage. And if you keep, like a basketball coach, you constantly and incessantly complain about liberal bias, then journalists will be freaked out to do anything that could be remotely favorable to Democrats or liberals. Because remember, a professional journalist, no matter what their politics, or certainly if they're even a liberal, especially if they're liberal, you don't want that to be apparent in your work. It being nonpartisan is key to your professional identity. They take great pride in that. So they're getting a barrage of criticism of being liberals. They do want to address that, and they move to their right then, and they're far more supportive of the political right as a result. And it's been a very effective campaign to really make the news a neutered force. A friend of mine is a working journalist, has been a working journalist for 20 years, has worked in a lot of different major newsrooms, said, without question, the number one bias in any newsroom he's been in is that all journalists are scared to death of being called liberals. That's the worst thing that can happen. So they fight back against that. They do everything in their power to not be called liberals. Even if they are liberals, that's the last thing they want to have happen.
You know, but someone listening might say, come on, what about Olbermann? You know, you see Keith Olbermann on the news station now, and he's really attacking President Bush and the administration. What do we say to somebody about that?
Oh, I think it's a very good point, and I think that is a new development in American journalism. It's not yet widespread. I mean, I think the Olbermann phenomenon, and I think Rachel Maddow would go with this too, because her show's in a similar political bent, although different style, obviously, the two hosts. I think what you have with both of them is that there was a large community of people in the United States who were appalled by the blatant right-wing journalism of Fox News, and almost equally appalled at the bland, wimpy apologetics of mainstream television news. And what happened was Keith Olbermann, pretty much I think on his own, basically over the last 8 years, gradually sort of let his political color show, and it became a massive commercial success by cable TV news standards. I mean, MSNBC was a fourth-rate channel basically 5 years ago, a third-rate. I mean, it was way out of the picture compared to CNN or Fox News. And along comes Keith Olbermann sort of letting his hair down, and suddenly it's kicking tail, especially among younger viewers, more educated viewers. I think that was driven by commercial considerations. But you got to keep something in mind about Keith Olbermann. They don't do journalism. They're journalists on Keith Olbermann's show. I mean, basically, they take stories other people do and publicize them and bring in talking heads to kick them around and assess them. But Keith Olbermann is not out doing investigative work or even covering anything, per se. He's just sort of going over the news of the day, pontificating on it, and giving his take on it. But it's a slightly different thing than a news show.
You're listening to The Logic Consortium. I'm your host, Jake Briscovich Briskman, and that was our interview with Professor Robert McChesney about his 2004 book, The Problem of the Media, talking about the system of professional journalism that we have in this country and how many times it really just reports on what people in government are talking about, which really lets politicians set the public's agenda and causes the phenomenon that when a journalist might bring something outside of what politicians are saying, they're called rogue or someone with an axe to grind, and that this is a weakness of the professional journalism system that we have. So thanks so much for listening to our show. Please visit our blog at logicconsortium.blogspot.com. for archives of past shows and for listener comments that will help make this show better. The music we're listening to now is from Baba Mal, which can be downloaded on iTunes. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great day.